Blog Talk Radio.
And, oh, that's not the right. Hold on a second. That's not the right one. Oh, there it is. And action.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do in this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on.
Is on.
Here's Ron.
Ron. All right, bus people. Thank you, thank you, thank you, bus people. And that was a good reading.
We have someone in hold.
Yeah, we got a guest already called in, is anxiously waiting to join the show. So we'll just jump right on it here. We've got a guest tonight, Chris Tunstall, he's co-founder of A Bar Above, and there's a lot more than just that involved with A Bar Above. So why don't we bring Chris on and let him start telling us all about all that good stuff. Good evening, Chris. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invitation.
No, I'm glad to have you with us. A Bar Above. There's a lot. I was reading your website and listen to a couple of your blogs, just all sorts of stuff you're involved with in A Bar Above. So I am going to let you talk. I'm going to let you tell us how it came about. Let's start at the beginning. That's how it came about.
Yeah,
how
absolutely.
You became a co-founder of A Bar Above. What is A Bar Above? And just go on and on. So, you know all about it. So let our listeners know all about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the story is, goes back a long way, all the way to when I was in Las Vegas. I was a craps dealer and, the croupiers were throwing dice on the table and all that. And I absolutely loved it. I did that for quite a few years. But I left Las Vegas and I needed something exciting, something that kind of replaced that energy around a craps table. Because it's very, it just kind of gets into you and you start to crave it after a while. So I got into tending bar. I felt like that was a nice kind of direct replacement for that kind of energy. And I fell in love with it. This was probably early 2000s and just absolutely fell in love with it. It, kind of scratched that itch. But there was a cocktail revolution that was happening around that time. It just started in its infancy. And I was paying attention to it. And it was really amazing that it was a very culinary driven evolution of the bar program. And there was only two places in the world that this was happening in. It was either in New York or it was in San Francisco. And so at that time, I was living in Sonoma and Napa, which is very appropriate for the show here. but I really started to pay attention and learning kind of these new techniques, using fresh juices, learning how to balance cocktails. So it was a really kind of big education for me and just kind of really started to focus on it, realized that it was going to take off and this was going to be something that kind of changed how we perceive cocktails. So I really leaned really heavily into it, learning all the techniques from, how to use fresh juice to making your own syrups, making, molecular techniques for making foams and caviars and stuff like that. So really trying to be at the cutting edge. Then I moved to San Francisco and realized that as much as you can find on the internet, which wasn't much at the time, there was no substitution for being there in person, living it day in, day out, because what you see and what you do are two different things.
Oh yeah.
So I realized I didn't have the technical skills to work in a high-paced environment like that. And it was an interesting time back in the day when mixology was kind of the word of the day. And typically what that meant was care about the customer, and you didn't share your knowledge. And that was kind of my experience as well. Like in that environment, you know, if you didn't know how to do something as a professional bartender, you were kind of looked down upon by the mixology crew. And it was a really kind of negative space. And the, kind of the double-edged sword of it is they wouldn't share the information with anybody. They were very kind of tightly guarded secret. But once you started to look into them, they weren't actually correct. Like once you put it in, like started to think about it and using kind of, you know, some science, light science and stuff. So it was really frustrating to me. And so that's kind of when a bar above was kind of in its infant stage of sharing information to basically anybody outside of San Francisco or New York that really didn't have access to that information of technique, the physical and the mental technique of attending a high-volume craft bar like that. So that's kind of where it started. And gosh, that was probably 2003, 2004. And then, you know, I met my wife. I started dating my wife, and I told her about this concept and idea. And the original idea was to start a blog to kind of share information. We started with YouTube. But the idea was always to create a training video and sell it by DVD. So, yeah, that obviously didn't work, but we did. It was just kind of it was at the end when Blockbuster was still kind of, you know, big, but it was on its way out. So, yeah, we started doing YouTube. Yeah. So, yeah, just kind of evolved it from there, YouTube videos, website. We do a podcast. We have two Facebook groups. All the social media platforms, and then along the way, we kept getting people ask us about what kind of bar tools we recommend, and at the time, there weren't many great ones, so we solved that problem too, and so now that's a majority of what we do is design really fantastic barware that will last in high-volume environments or be really great for somebody at home too. So,
sounds,
long story.
Yeah, well, no, that sounds like a great story. Okay, different question, jumping back on it. When you were doing the first bartending stuff and all that, living in Sonoma at the time, Napa, that area?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and, you know, the concept of having wine as part of your cocktail is, even now, it sounds foreign. I mean, wine isn't part of a cocktail. Wine is wine, and you pour it in a glass and you drink it. You don't mix it with, you know, anything else. If you do, you go to the store and buy it in a little bottle, and they have a special name for it with mixed other stuff. So what brought on the idea that you can actually do a wine cocktail and have it surpass the preconceived idea that it was just a kiddie drink?
Yeah, and that's a really good question. And I think when we start to talk about kind of the environment of mixology and cocktail creation, there's one thing that's kind of common with a lot of people that do this, and that is no ingredient is sacred for us. Like, if it's obscure and weird, we want it more. Like, if you tell us we can't have it, that's the only thing we want. We're like a 4-year-old, right? So, you know, with that being said, wine is kind of the sacred thing, and which I'm a intro or first level psalm, and I agree, like, wine has this beauty to it, and it's a very expressive, you know, product that just is a reflection of its terroir and care and history and all that. So I do understand that, but from the bartending side, you know, we're looking for every single ingredient we can get our hands on. And if it gives us a little bit boost in flavor, if it gives us anything that we can kind of twist and turn into a cocktail that is interesting and unique and different, you better believe we're going to do it. So we've tried some really, really strange stuff behind the bar in order to make some really fun cocktails. So that's, you know, one thing. But there's kind of a longstanding history of wine cocktails. You know, sangria, for example, is kind of an old school version of that. Verjus could be argued, or not verjus, vermouth could be argued that is a wine-based cocktail. So there's a long-standing history, you know, of using that in drinks and stuff. So it's always been just another ingredient that we have in our back pocket, and one that I love to use in drinks.
I think you hit upon the main one, though, the sangria. I mean, that's really not a wine so much as it is a cocktail, a blend of everything and fruits and all that. And so that gives you the wine base and all. I have to share a story with you here. I worked at a liquor store, wine and liquor store, which had a bar in it. And this was in, early 90s. And it's not the easiest thing. I'm not a bartender. I was never trained as a bartender. If somebody would sit down, I would say, okay, I can make anything as long as there's two ingredients, and one of them has to be soda or water. And that was, you know, the extent of my my bartending. But there was two other bartenders beside myself, and we decided to create a drink. And actually, it was published. We did come up with a drink, but the procedure to get to something that was pleasing to the taste was a chore. I mean, we would try a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and we had an excess amount of blue Carioca. Is it pronounced? I can't remember.
Blue Curacao, yeah.
Yeah, blue Curacao. We had an excess amount of that, and so we decided we'd make our drink blue. And the process of coming up with the right combination to keep it a blue color and yet have it taste right and be appealing to all the senses was really quite a task. We didn't realize what we got ourselves into as we got the enthusiasm to start until we finally got the final product. And, you know, point being to make all these different wine ingredients or wine-based cocktails has to be quite a chore, because it's not this, okay, well, we'll take a little bit of this wine and we'll put a little bit of this in it, a little bit of that, and there you go, we're all done. I mean, do you have a base that you start with, or what is the concept of coming up with something? I know it was very difficult for us. I mean, we had an idea of a blue cocktail at the end, but we didn't know the journey that it would take to get there.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned it. One of the things I didn't mention is back in 2014, my wife and I actually created a mixology certification, and I believe it's the only one in the world that I know of. But it's a really intense course. It's from beginning to end, if you were to take it at a kind of a nice, you know, deep pace, it takes you about 9 weeks.
Wow.
So it's a very serious course of study. And one of the things that you learn, and this kind of goes to your point about, you know, throwing a bunch of stuff in the glass and trying to figure out the structure of a drink and all that. There's one main thing that I always try to tell people when they're starting out their journey on making cocktails, and this really applies to taking an abstract ingredient like wine and applying it and seeing how it fits in the cocktail world. And that piece of advice is, you know, throw out all your cocktail books. You know, all the ones that have recipes, because you're not going to learn anything except a recipe in it. What instead, you know, concentrate on the fundamentals. And the fundamentals when it comes to cocktails are what I like to call cocktail family, ingredients, and technique. Those are kind of the big three things to really focus on. So when we talk about, you know, how we can bring wine into the cocktail space, the first thing we have to understand is the concept of a cocktail family. And that is, you know, imagine you have a whiskey sour, and traditionally that is whiskey, lemon juice, simple syrup, and optionally an egg. So two parts whiskey, one part lemon juice, one part simple syrup. Now, if you take one step back from that and just do like vague style ingredients, like 10,000 foot level ingredients, you have a base spirit, you have acid, and you have sweetness. And those things all balance out to make a good cocktail. So that is what is considered a sour family of cocktail. And you can put any spirit in there to replace the whiskey, and it's going to be a drinkable, delicious cocktail. Same thing with the citrus. If you put in lemon or lime, it's probably going to be equally as good. and simple syrup, you have a lot of options at your disposal for making a really flavorful ingredient there. So if you do, instead of white sugar, you do brown sugar, or simple syrup is one part sugar to one part water. So if you were to infuse that water with tea, you have a tea simple syrup, and now it's fancy. Or if you replace some of the sweetener with, like, strawberry jam, now you have something that's more interesting. So, and then you can kind of substitute these things in once you understand the variables. So understanding that cocktail family, you can start to see where you can start plugging in wine as that ingredient. So understanding cocktail family is kind of like the first step in creating cocktails like that. I know that's a long-winded answer, but
no, that's
I think
a good
it's one
answer.
That a lot of people don't.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, touch on.
That's but then you were saying that, so I suppose that applies then to the different wines. You're saying that the syrups, the basic syrups, you can vary that by the ingredients. I suppose that's the same with wine, though. A cocktail mixed with Cabernet Sauvignon as opposed to Merlot, as opposed to Pinot Noir, as opposed to Barbera, is going to change the flavor concept of it. Not greatly, but
absolutely,
it will change the flavor concept of it because of the different wines. Now, when you do got cocktails with wines, what is, and let me also say that Chris has sent us a, I think, three recipes, and it's up on our Facebook page now. So if anybody wants to check it out, there's three of Chris's wine recipes. But when you do a recipe with wine, is wine the primary ingredient, or is it secondary, even tertiary, because of other ingredients that's going to balance? I mean, do you try to bring out the flavors of the wine, or is it just...
Yeah. That's a great question, and I think it really is on what you're focusing on. And I feel like there's many stages of wine and cocktails, from kind of easy-level stuff like sangrias and French 75s, and even a New York sour, and I'll talk a little bit about each one of those here in a second. And then there is, you know, the next step up, where you're using wine as a viable ingredient, either as a replacement for your base spirit, or even as something as sacrilegious as turning it into a simple syrup. I know that's probably not what people want to hear on this one. You know, the idea of taking a Chateauneuf pop, boiling it down until, you know, it's half the size, and then putting a bunch of sugar in there, probably going to make a lot of people show up on my door with pitchforks. I fully realize
cringe. Yeah, just make your shoulders shake. You just shiver thinking about it.
A little bit. And I fully acknowledge that. I fully get it. But, like, even beyond that, there's a whole other level of, you know, wine as it applies to cocktails, and that is kind of at the pinnacle of all of it is pairing. Like, if you could design a cocktail that pairs with food, that is kind of the pinnacle of cocktail creation. It's one of the hardest things to do because you have to have a lot of education and discipline. So when we talk about wine, I think those are kind of the evolution of wine and cocktails. So if I'm designing a cocktail specifically to bring out the qualities of that wine, then yeah, I'm going to use a lot of it. It's going to be almost a replacement for my base spirit, or it's going to have a really pronounced focus. And I'm going to choose ingredients that I think are really going to amplify qualities of that wine. So when we talk about that cocktail structure, the family, you know, one of the components is acid. So then I kind of use my education in wine to figure out, okay, you know, is there a really great acid that I could use that really will pronounce wine? And of course you could use like a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc or something like that, you know, with a nice punch of acid, but also Verjus. You know, Verjus, you know, they pull the grapes off early harvest to give more energy into the grapes to get bigger yields or bigger, more juicy grapes. But those early, you know, grapes that they pull off, they're super high in acid. And the French use it as an acid for like salad dressing and stuff. So once again, I'll look at Verjus as an acid replacement.
So then
Ron, I'm not going to lie. I love this stuff. I could talk about this all day. I'm not even going to lie.
Well, you have a captive audience in myself and Mike. I'm sure Mike is is tweeting and writing this stuff down and going crazy because that's what he does in the background here. So, yeah, I mean, you know, this is great. The first thing you said, Shatodin, about you reduce it and get – who would consider taking a good bottle – of Chateau Pop and reducing it down and getting a basic syrup from it. I mean, that's just scary to think that you're not going to get what you want at the end there.
And I think you know, there's something I mentioned earlier, and I think this is really important to just bring back to the forefront because I understand kind of the audience I'm talking to here, and that is, I mentioned nothing is sacred in kind of our space. And I do mean that. Like, if you give me, you know, enough money and you give me a project and say, I need you to create this particular cocktail, I'm going to do it. And if you say you can use a chef to mix the pop, then great. I'm going to do that too. Full respect and full love of all things wine. But if that's kind of the focus that you give me, I'm going to go ahead and figure out how to do that. So that being said, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for these kind of things at the highest level of cocktail creation when you're talking to brands, when you're talking to, you know, high-end restaurants, and you're looking to extract that amazing experience. That's when we start to talk about these things. If you're a neighborhood bar, you're probably not going to be, you know, condensing Chef Mix to Pop down and to make a syrup out of it or anything like that. So. There's not a lot of chef and mystery pops being boiled out for simple syrup to put everybody happy.
Yeah, a sigh of relief coming from me that time. You didn't really hear it, but it was there. It was,
I believe it.
You mentioned, you know, someone come up to you. When you do a new cocktail, is the end result already... I refer back to when I said we created one. Our end result was to have a blue cocktail that had a little bit of sweetness and that was enjoyable and all that stuff. And we came up with that. Mm-hmm. And the road to that was a pain, to be honest with you. Is the end
Absolutely,
result yeah. what you always have in the future that you're aiming for? Or do you start and say, okay, I'm going to use these ingredients. Let's see what type of end result I can get.
Absolutely. And I think there's the beginning of stage of understanding ingredients and components, and that is where that lives, right? And I think that messing around and learning how ingredients work is really critical and important. And I'm not going to do that with a chef and a pop. You know, I'll do that with Barefoot Sellers or, you know, something a little bit more approachable and
less expensive. Let me jump in there, though. When you mm-hmm. do it with, say, Barefoot Sellers, obviously and nothing against. In fact, we had the founders of Barefoot Sellers on the program. Nothing against the
wine
itself.
They do a fantastic job.
They do a fantastic job. But it is not the it's a wine that is every day, if you will, as opposed to one that is a little bit more – exclusive, a little bit more pricey. So based on that, you say you do your experiment with Barefoot Sellers, but doesn't that not really give you the final results that you're looking for once you switch that wine to something else?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of learning that happens in those early stages. So for example, you know, one of the things I would focus on is if I'm going to plan on doing that, and I at this point I do have a target in mind. I know how this is going to turn out and what I want to do. But at that point, there's a lot of just, you know, I wonder how this is going to work. So that being said, you know, when you boil it down, you're looking for overarching themes of how that wine is going to play with those ingredients and what happens when I can mix it down to 50%. Because one thing that could very well happen is instead of condensing that flavor of wine that you're really going for, you're going to burn it. You're going to turn it bitter. It's going to go off. And, you know, so there's some manipulation and kind of forethought that you're thinking, like, all right, what's going to happen? And if you do it two or three times and you get the same result, you know that no matter what, if you do this, it's going to turn out this way, no matter what wine you put into that equation. So you're looking for overarching themes when you're starting to experiment here. And this is the other thing, you know, there's a lot of different techniques that you would apply, and condensing wine into a syrup is just one of those techniques. So hopefully that makes
It does, okay. Because, I mean, I'm sure just changing, like we just mentioned, change from a cab to a Merlot is going to change the basic flavor of your cocktail. So,
going
one type of wine to another will, I think, affect it quite a bit, too. So that does answer the question, yes.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, I mean, to get back to the original question, I think when I start to use wine as an ingredient, I always have a target in mind of what I want this cocktail to be. And then I marry that with ingredients, what I have at my disposal, like the Verjus conversation. And then I use technique that I've learned to get me to that final, like, mental cocktail that I've already designed and concepted out. So that's kind of how they all kind of work together.
So you do have a basic target, and then you're, you know, manipulating your ingredients to reach that target. Okay, that's...
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is understandable there. You said that you were going to cover a couple other topics later, and you were talking about the different cocktails.
Sure, yeah. So there's a handful of cocktails that we kind of talked about and covered here earlier, and I think it was one was a sangria, and I think everyone kind of knows at the heart of what sangria is.
Right.
You know, it's wine with fruit, sugar, and particularly like a soda element or carbonated element, and potentially fortified. You add some brandy to it or, you know, a spirit of your choice. So that's kind of the roadmap of a sangria. And typically a lot of fruit juice, too.
Right.
And I'm sure everyone has probably had versions of it. The other two that I mentioned was the French 75. So French 75 is a very classic cocktail when it comes to craft cocktails, and it's gin, lemon juice, a little bit of simple syrup, and sparkling wine. And my understanding is historically that is named after the artillery pieces that were being fired off during World War One or World War II, and it would just terrify them. And so, you know, as a celebration of that, they called this cocktail a French 75. But it's a lovely drink. It is light. It's refreshing. The sparkling wine just kind of makes it effervescent and delicious. And it's a really good aperitif. You know, if you're having oysters, it's a magical combination, French 75 and oysters. So, you know, you could manipulate those ingredients there. You know, we talked about the structure. We have spirit, which is gin, acid, which is lemon juice. We have a simple syrup, which is your sweetener, and then you add the carbonated element, which is your sparkling wine. So now that you've identified those four variables, you could really have some fun applying your techniques, substitute ingredients in there, and come up with something very unique, very different, pretty easily. So that's a phenomenal cocktail to just have fun with. And this is that particular cocktail, in my opinion, really shows off the quality and the differences in sparkling wine.
That was going to be my next question. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so true. But you know, Prosecco doesn't act like sparkling wine. Doesn't act like champagne. So you have a lot of different carbonation qualities that are happening in there, and different flavor profiles, which is so much fun to play with.
You can go dry champagne. You can go sweet champagne. It's. You know, so many different profiles of champagne, cavas, proseccos. It's just almost endless out there. So just the different ingredients. So based on that, if you order a French 75 at one bar and you go across town to another and you order it again, are they still using the same sparkling wine, or does it change? So therefore, it's going to give you a different drink.
Well, it's going to change depending on what they're pouring, because they're not going to open a bottle of champagne at the bar. They're going to have whatever they serve as sparkling, which is going to be different at every single place. So this is where it really gets interesting. And Ron, I can tell that I've already piqued your interest in this. And now, you know, maybe a year from now, you're going to be talking to me and be like, Chris, oh my God, you've ruined me. And now all I can do is just, you know, step in to pop at all my cocktails. This is how it starts.
Yeah. Well, like I say, it's just, you know, you said that the French 75 is such a wonderful drink and all that, and, you know, you get used to the one taste of it with using a certain champagne or sparkling wine or whatever you're using, then you walk into a restaurant, you sit down and say, okay, oysters and French 75, and then all of a sudden it's a completely different taste profile. So I don't know, that would be scary when a cocktail is made a certain way with certain wines, but just the difference of the wine is going to change that cocktail completely. I mean, it's a 7-7 is 7-Up and Seagram's 7. Okay, you know that you're not going to make a 7-7 with 7-Up and bourbon. It's going to be Seagram's 7. And if it is made with bourbon, you're going to go, ooh, this doesn't taste like a 7-7. Well, the same thing I would think would happen when you start getting used to a certain wine cocktail and you go to somebody else, unless they're using the same ingredients, it's going to be different. It's going to, I don't know, be disappointing.
Yeah, and I think
or
this is
be
one of the...
Go on.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, I think this is one of the critical differences between the world of wine and the world of cocktails, is with wine, you know, the more you're educated, the more you really start to appreciate, you know, all of the producers, the regions, and you really start to dive into wine, there's consistency there. There's things you're betting on that you already know. Okay, I know that, you know, this particular producer in France is going to produce this particular style of wine, and I can bet on that year after year after year. You know, you have your house style, and it's going to be this style year after year after year. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about cocktails, is you are going on a bit of a trust adventure. And sometimes it's going to backfire on you completely. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I've done that a couple of times. So, you know, it's all about being in the right environment, you know, establishing a relationship with the bartender that's producing this, and level of trust as well, right? So I wouldn't go into, you know, a neighborhood bar and order oysters. Well, I probably wouldn't do that, period.
Anyway, yeah.
But, yeah, exactly. Yeah. If it was reputable and it was a thing and that was a jam, totally. But I'm probably not going to order a French 75 to go with that, because the bartender back there probably doesn't hasn't dedicated the education and the time to develop those skills to make that particular drink well with oysters. So it's about the establishment as well. So 100%, you're absolutely right. It's not going to be consistent, but that's part of the beauty also of, like, you're trusting this person, their education, their passion, and you're kind of surrendering to their abilities. And sometimes it's going to be beautiful, and sometimes it's going to be laughable, and it'll be a great conversation for the person you're with.
Yeah, I can imagine it would. Yes. Yeah. It just, I don't know, mixing wine and cocktails, it seems to me like there would be so many variables that it's going to, well, like I say, you know, it's like a 7-7. You got a basic taste if you're used to one style, but then, you know, a different wine is going to throw you a whole new flavor profile, just like the wine itself is. And
yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and I mean, I think the big thing is, you know, I have a deep, you know, appreciation for wine. Like I mentioned, I'm a first-level sommelier, so I have a lot of education when it comes to wine, flavor profiles, what to expect and all that stuff. And when we talk about ingredients and variability and things, like, I wouldn't recommend just anybody diving into cocktails. You know, knowing a lot about wine, you have that expectation, you know what you're dealing with. But when it comes to cocktails, that's only one small ingredient in all of the ingredients that are out there, and the techniques you have at your disposal, and that balance of acid, spirit, and sweetener on a high level. So yeah, it's, it can be intimidating. There's a lot to it, and I think that's you know, maybe you don't do it right when you open a fresh bottle of wine. Maybe, you know, day two and you're feeling a little bit adventurous. You're like, I'm not sure this is, you know, up to its prime. Let me throw in the cocktail, see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah, that would it would be one way to treat a wine as opposed to, you know, just some people say, well, yeah, I'm going to just throw it in this pot of stew. I mean, it, you know, it's going to change the flavors of everything that way. So that makes sense. So your course, in beginners. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Our mixology certification.
Yeah, mixology certification. I'm sitting here. I was pausing because I'm looking at your website at the same time, and my brain doesn't always work twice. Yeah. So you on this website, it has, you know, just beginners, enthusiasts, bartenders, operators. Are these broken down in when you teach the course? Do you assume everyone knows nothing and go from there, or do you say, okay, I've been a bartender for 20 years and I want to do this course and become more fluid in the wine aspect of making cocktails? Do you say, okay, well, forget the bartending thing because you're going to approach this differently, just like you would a beginner? So
And I think that's a really good question, because the course itself is really designed for anybody. Like, this is very deep knowledge on all of the ingredients, all the variables that I've kind of mentioned and I've kind of laid out. You know, you have your ingredients, you have your cocktail family, and you have your technique. Those are the three main areas that we cover. So we go into great depth in the first part of our course just on ingredients. So I think the very first course we talk about just acids. So we talk about the common ones, lemon, lime, orange, pineapple, cranberry that we use behind the bar. And then we break those down into what is the pH of every single one of those ingredients? What is the sugar content of every one of those ingredients? Okay, well, those are the big ones. But a lemon isn't a lemon. You know, you have different varieties of lemons. So now we talk about Meyer lemons and all these different varieties of lemons. And we talk about the pH in those and the sugar content and lime and oranges and pineapples. So we really explore every single variable in a cocktail from an ingredient perspective to almost a fanatical level. It's pretty in-depth. And then, you know, once we take the things that we know and we can identify, like all those ingredients from the citrus components, then we start talking about what else is out there. Verjus is a prime example of that. Certainly not used in cocktails very often, but it has such a high pH that we can use that in our arsenal of ingredients to amplify wine in that context. But then we go into refined acids as well. So, you know, citric acid, malic acid, lactic acid, you know, all very common terms in the wine world from a production standpoint.
Right.
But now how can we use those refined acids to amplify and fortify some of those ingredients as well? So that is just one example of kind of the depth that we go through. And this is really to arm and to educate people that have literally no education in spirits or cocktails, to get them from this is really scary to at the end of this course, I can concept out a cocktail in my head and I have the framework, the technique, and the understanding on how to do that. It is a really interesting course, and anybody that's excited about cocktails or learning to that level, like I said, I have never seen a class like this ever anywhere in the world. I highly recommend it. I'm a little bit probably personal on it since we created it, but that was kind of always the idea of giving you everything you need to know. I highly recommend it. People take it.
Okay, I have a question. I'm not trying to put you on the spot here. If someone says, I want to take this course, but who the heck is this guy? What you said, it's only one of its type in the world, and so therefore it is unique. What are you bringing to the table that is unique?
Absolutely. No, that's a very fair question. And I'll be honest, I'm an open book, so feel free to kind of ask any questions as far as that goes. So,
devil's advocate there, that's all. I mean, you know, it's...
No, I love it. I really do appreciate the get to talk about it, because I do think it's important, because anybody can create a course and consider themselves, an expert in this field.
Right,
So my kind of history is, like I mentioned, I started bartending back in like 2000, 2003, and I caught a whiff of kind of what was happening in the craft cocktail space. As soon as I did that, back in 2003, 2004, that's all I was dedicated on. I was dedicated on learning every single of these techniques, applying them, and seeing how to use them in a cocktail setting. So my passion has always been that, and educating people. So, that's 15 years, 19 years now, of me dedicating myself to learning these techniques. Along the way, I acquired my first level psalm, so I use that often, all the time. In how I construct cocktails. But I've also been in the industry for I was a bartender doing high-end craft cocktails in years. I did a restaurant we were aiming for a Michelin, a place called The Girl and the Fig in Sonoma. I kind of took their menu and kind of modernized it. Went into San Francisco, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with a gentleman by the name of Tyler Florence. He was one of the celebrity chefs on the Food Network.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran his beverage program for 5 years,
along
with consulting for Diageo, along with helping to launch Patron Roca tequila when it came out to market, and a lot of events and working with the industry. So as far as like pedigree, I think I've earned my lumps and kind of demonstrated my skill. I probably am not as famous as some of the other people in the space. But if you go to a lot of the craft cocktail bars in the area, then you say the word a bar above, many people will know who we are in this.
Oh, very good.
We do some fun, really crazy stuff, like advanced cutting edge techniques that just aren't scalable, but they sure are fun to play with.
you mentioned your pairing of your wine cocktails with food. Do you have access to exclusive foods now? I mean, obviously you can go down and pick yourself up a hamburger anywhere, but something that is a little more exclusive, on the Michelin style restaurants and stuff. Do you have access to that to work with your cocktails, or do you just
So with that, that is some of the things that I've done in my past. One of the things I did, I was chosen to represent San Francisco in an event called Patron Secret Dining Society. So they had all these pop-ups all over the country, in all these major markets, and San Francisco was one of them. And the concept is you get a really high caliber chef, Michelin level chef or James Beard Award winning chef in that location, and you pair them with a mixologist in that location. So I was actually chosen to do that. And the person they chose to pair me with was a Michelin level chef. So we concepted out a menu, we bounced ideas off each other, and the focus was to create a cohesive menu between cocktails and food. So that was a lot of kind of the work that I was doing when I was behind the bar, was kind of that level of work. Not only did I have access to, the ingredients at that level, but I also had access to the education and the chefs and their minds and the pastry chef's minds and their input and their expertise. They really did help me to understand ingredients to a much deeper level. And how to utilize them in cocktails. That was a fun time. That was an amazing part of my journey, for sure.
It sounds like it, I mean, and I was just thinking, the input from the different chefs and all that would probably be a great resource for the cocktail, because they would be looking at a different angle of it as opposed to what you would probably approach it. So it would be interesting there.
Absolutely. Great conversations with chefs about that. And the focus of them is always flavor development and targeting, you know, when flavors get released. So it was an amazing education. Definitely a lot to learn.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, probably, you know, just, you know, my brain is full. Yeah. your bar tools. There's quite a bit dedicated on your website about your bar tools and all the different things that you have there. What got you into that? What did you say? Okay, everybody needs this stuff. I need to, you know, be an outlet for it. Or what is the thought behind doing the whole bar tool thing?
So a lot of A Bar Above was started out of frustration. I kind of already mentioned the information and the blogging, and as a way to kind of, you know, share with the world, you know, what was happening at that time. The tools were also born out of frustration. You know, we had the podcast, we had YouTube, and we had people asking us at the time, you know, what bar tools do you recommend? And back then, like 2015, 2016, when you went on Amazon and searched for a Boston Shaker, you know, the two feet that you see behind bars, there was only two, and they didn't work well, and there was problems with it. So there was no professional set, believe it or not. So we actually launched, I think, the third Boston Shaker. So basically, my wife was like, you keep saying that these tools are garbage. Well, what are you going to do about it? So we did something about it. We created better tools. So, you know, that's kind of what we do, is address a lot of the frustration and kind of the where bar tools fail. You know, I handled enough bar tools in my life. I've broken pretty much all of them, and I know at where they fail, why they fail, and so we remedy that and just make the best bar tools that you could possibly have. It's funny, like the other day, about 6 months ago, the very first cocktail shaker that we sourced from China, the very first one that we sourced, we gave to a friend of mine in Florida and said, just tell me how it is. And, you know, he loved it. And he sent it back to me about 6 months ago. And he told me that our cocktail shaker lasted almost 100,000 cocktails in that time.
Wow.
And I have it sitting on my desk. So, you know, we design things that will last in a high volume place, but also can work inside of anyone's home. So, you know, like I said, I've been frustrated with a lot of the cocktail tools in the past, either from a functional standpoint or a company that does not have good customer service for the hospitality industry. So that's kind of where we are really focused on, is developing great tools with the bartenders in mind. We've been very successful in that space and really enjoying that development of bar tools as well.
Yeah, well, they're beautiful. They're on your website. Anyone who is curious too, you can check out all this, abarabove.com. Simple as that. Nothing fancy, no dots or dashes or anything, just a simple A Bar Above, and you can access all this stuff. The podcast, how did that come about? And yeah, I see you've celebrated over 200 episodes now. How did that come about? What is the basic theme? I mean, we're all about wine, and it's wine. What is your basic thing? Cocktails, or mixing cocktails, or you know, what is your basis of a podcast if we were to sit down and listen to one?
Yeah, so there's a kind of a wide gamut of information that we kind of covered over the years. You know, there's a lot of, you know, information sharing as far as techniques and stuff. There's a lot of conversations about industry-focused stuff. There's a lot of conversations about, you know, as as a professional bartender, what are your next steps in your career? Do you want to be an entrepreneur? Do you want to be a brand ambassador? So originally, we really did cater to an industry audience and supporting them and giving them good advice. You know, how do you make more money behind a bar? Well, there's a couple of variables. And I always try to think of things in variables, like what are the things that I can influence? And then give advice in that way. So if you have a higher check average, that could increase, you know, your income. If you have more term, if you just go through more people for volume, then that gives you opportunity to make more money from a volume perspective. So we try to give a good advice from that for anybody in the industry, whether it be starting your career, going to the next steps in your career, starting a business, you know, health, longevity, mental health, all of that. And then recently we've kind of switched a little bit more over to more cultural stuff because I realized that, you know, the representation that is in craft cocktails is very singular. It's a very one-dimensional lens. And I felt like with our platform and kind of who we are as a company, that our platform would be best served with, you know, amplifying people that probably don't have a voice in this community and getting their thoughts and their take on cocktails, because it's fascinating and they bring so, like, the conversations have changed considerably and they have become more interesting and, you know, the history they bring and the culinary side they bring to the conversation is just so unique and so cool. Just a one voice, you know, movement. Then it would probably not be as interesting. So it has been really amazing and kind of refreshing from that aspect too.
Yeah, I watched not the whole episode. I watched a couple of episodes just, you know, to get an idea of what you were doing. And I watched the more recent ones. I didn't see, you know, I didn't pull up archive and watch the older ones, but the more recent ones. And I got the feeling that it would apply to anyone who might just be interested in listening a little bit about cocktails and that area of the industry and all. It seemed you know, very informative of that. I was curious, though, do you get different guests on, or is it just you and your wife, or what is your format?
Yeah, so we typically do guests. You know, we've done it for, gosh, 8 years now. We did the podcast. We just went on hiatus because after making a podcast for 8 years, creative break. And so we were kind of reframing that a little bit. But for the most part, it was me and my wife or me and a guest. Because I always try to have a conversation with somebody that's truly an expert in their space. Because not only has been a much more interesting conversation, but I can't be an expert in everything. I don't want to be, but I want to find the people that are, right, and learn from them. I've learned more from that podcast than I probably have 10 years, 15 years behind the bar.
Let me tell you.
Because of the conversation.
yeah, we're doing our podcast.
Me, right?
Oh, I tell you, I have learned so much. I mean, just so many fascinating things doing this. It's just amazing.
And it's incredible. Like, I feel like it's too good to be true. Like, I can reach out to almost anybody in the industry that's at the very top, and we could have a great conversation, you know, and I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't have a platform and give them the spotlight. So it's really a lot of fun.
It is. I can understand and relate to that, and I agree. It is a lot of fun. You say you went on hiatus. Why? I mean, geez, we've been doing this for 13 years, and I still get a kick out of it every week. Did you do it weekly or more often or less often? What was your schedule?
Twice a month is what we did. We were doing it once a week in the beginning, and it's too much, and the logistics of kind of finding guests and all that, it just kind of took a little bit of creative toll, and there's other sides of the business. You know, like I said, we do a lot of things. We have a very small team, but we do a lot of things. And one of the areas that has been neglected in our business for quite a few years is product development. So we haven't released any new bar tools in probably about a year or two. And as an e-commerce company, primarily, you know, that innovation and new lineup in your portfolio is really important, just to excite the people that love your tools and to give them an opportunity to kind of grow with you in their journey. So I've been able to kind of put a lot more creative energy into that. Learning more about the business is, you know, as I'm sure you can fully relate to, you know, when you are passionate about something like I am with cocktails and you are with wine, you know, we devour a lot of that information. But when you have a business and you're doing production and you're doing media, you have to learn that side of it too. So, you know, and that takes you away from your passion and all these things. So, you know, it's a small pause. We're going to kind of bolster the capabilities of our company in the meantime, add a lot of new products, which I'm really excited about. We're launching a lot of new products probably this year and next. And then probably thoughtfully bring back the podcast and YouTube videos to help, you know, educate and support, you know, the industry, because that's what we're about. We're really about supporting people that work in the industry, because I did it for 15 years. I understand how hard it is. So I want to give them every opportunity to succeed and take away any of the barriers people in that space.
You mentioned bar tools. Now, you have your basic bar tools. You have your shakers, you have your strainers, and your stirrers. That is a basic set of bar tools. So what prompts you to say, okay, we need a whatever to do this job? I mean, it seems like your basics have been around for so long and they do the job. What gives you the thought to think that it needs to have something else in that set to do the job more efficiently?
Yeah. So one of the things that's happening in the craft cocktail space is there's just an absolute evolution of what's happening, and the tools that we use are evolving. The techniques that we have at our disposal are just going crazy. So yes, you have your standard bar set, you have your standard, you know, things that you see behind any common bar. But
right.
Then when you start to getting into the area that we're talking about and talking about, you know, cocktail creation and ingredient production and manipulating the ingredients to a higher level, there's so much opportunity there to support and really foster that community. So smoked cocktails has been a big thing recently, where you add a smoked element in a presentation piece to a cocktail. So that's an opportunity for us to create something that is thoughtfully designed for a bartender or a home enthusiast, you know, using my experience and thoughtful product design. So there is no limit of products that we can produce. And I'm not joking, we probably are going to have somewhere between 13 new, brand new lineups of in the next year, and probably, you know, we probably have about 60 that are slotted for the next couple of years. So there's no shortage. And as this community and, you know, area evolves, it's just going to open up more opportunities to support bartenders in that creative space.
You know what you're doing, Chris. What you're doing is you're getting yourself spread even thinner and thinner and thinner whenever you start doing all this.
Well, and honestly, Ron, I think my hope is, like, you know, this thing, you know, there's going to be a point where we can fulfill our primary mission, and that is education. You know, the bar tools pay the bills, but our driver has always been education. You know, we started as a blog to communicate techniques and stuff. So that's always at the heart of our brand. And the bar tools allow us to fund that education component of our company.
Oh, well, you know, and if you have new, unique ones out there, they are going to be grabbed because it is something that is new and unique. And so obviously it's going to work that way. Your course, your class, what is the cost for that?
Mm-hmm. I believe I'll have to check, but I think it's $150. And I'll be honest with you, we undercharge. And I know we do.
Yeah, you do. 150 cheap. Yeah, I know. I was expecting more.
Yeah.
And can someone jump in anytime, or do you have set dates that you start a new course, or is it online and they can just go through that way? How does that work?
Yeah, so it is all online. You can take it at your own pace. So anybody in the world can take this, and we have people all over the world graduating through the certification every day. It's pretty cool. So you can take it at your own pace. I highly recommend the way the course is structured. I think there's like 9, maybe 12 different modules where we go, like one module would be acid and we identify everything. So there's like 9 or 12 different modules that we do a significant deep dive into. It's a lot of video, and there's also additional homework. So, if, you know, we touch upon a subject and we don't go deep enough for you, we give you links to go as deep as you want to go, or reference books, or give you anything that you want to go to really fuel your creativity and your passion. And we also do tests. So to go from one module to the next, you have to pass an exam.
Oh, no, test.
Yeah, and, you know, for the most part, you know, the modules themselves are pretty light because we want to make sure that you are understanding the concept. But it's not just something you're going to breeze through. And at the end, there's a final, multiple choice final. And there's an actual exam that you have to fill out that somebody actually grades. So the certification does mean something special. Not everybody passes. It's kind of like the sommelier exam in that regard.
Only not as hard, obviously. Yeah.
It's a different focus. For sure. Probably not as hard because we can't do the tasting component like you can with a song and in person since it is all online, but there's a lot of information you have to in your back pocket and demonstrate proficiency in. So, it's a different thing for sure.
That sounds a lot more involved than what I first pictured or first thought. That's good. Mike, do you have any questions for Chris or any comments or anything?
Actually, I was when y'all were talking about the French 75, I went on a bar above and found the recipe, and it's really cool. I don't know if you saw it, Ron, but if you go to abarabove.com/recipe/French-75, the number 75, you'll get the ingredients and the instructions. And what's really cool is you can select the number of servings you want, and the ingredients change accordingly, the amounts. And which brought me to another question, because like the default I think was 4 servings. Wine pours, we know, are generally 12 to 16 ounces. I'm sorry, 4 ounces. And what is a little bit big glass.
I'm coming to your house, Mike, for dinner. That's all I'm saying. I'm bringing a big old glass.
Yeah, really.
And I promise I won't boil it down into a syrup. I promise.
Yeah.
Is there a typical cocktail pour? Is there an amount that's, you know, pretty much a standard like in wine when you say pour, it's, you know, 4 or 5 ounces. I think it was. I forgot. But
I think it depends on the cocktail you're making. Like most standard pours in a bar are anywhere from 1.5 to 2 ounces. Classic cocktails, 2 ounces of alcohol is a general kind of baseline for the industry. That's about what we kind of go with. But then when this is all about balance, then you know, you're adding alcohol in a form of wine. So now you need to subtract from the alcohol you're using, or else it's going to be overpowering. So there's a balance element when you're using ingredients that have alcohol in it too.
That's interesting. But it is good that you know, with the instructions you mentioned what is needed to make it and everything, and then you have the shop as well, like you were talking about before, where you can actually go in and purchase what you need if you don't have it. Like myself, I don't know what a fine mesh strainer is, but I, looking at your site, I go, oh, okay. you have everything.
Yeah, right. We try to make it easy, you know, to spend money with us.
Yeah. Well, you know, you want to get into it. You have the recipes, you know, for somebody who isn't into it yet. You also have the kits, you know, the complete set and everything. You've got individual items, and it's all right there. I mean, all you need to do is get your ingredients together and get the what you need to do to make it. And there's a good connection there, and it's all right there. So check out the shop as well. But it's very, very well done. And anybody out there, the mixology certification course, only $150. That is very inexpensive for what you get. It's roughly 8-9 weeks, depending. I mean, unless you spend all day on it or something, you can get through it, but take your time. And, it's done in your
absorb
own pace. So do it.
Absorb it.
Yeah.
Understand
and
it. Yeah.
Absorb it. Don't just take it to say, okay, where's my certificate? Take it and learn something and then, you know, go through the final exams and everything. It's really cool. So, I am taking notes.
But, yeah, I know. You always do. Well, Chris, before once Mike's done there, I wasn't trying to cut you off. Before we leave, give us all of your contact information, websites, and you do a lot of stuff. I mean, you have blogs, you have just, you know, Twitter, YouTube, you're on Spotify. Facebook groups, all sorts of stuff. Give us the contact ways that anyone out there can get a hold of you or follow, or phone numbers, address that they want to write you a letter, email, whatever. Give us all the contacts so people can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that on most social media platforms, if you just look at at A Bar Above, ABARABOVE, you're probably going to find us. We are very active on Instagram. We just launched TikTok, which I feel like I'm way too old to do TikTok, but here we are. We're doing TikTok. Facebook, I believe, is look up A Bar Above. You'll find us. We have two Facebook groups, the Craft Bartender Community, which I highly recommend anybody if you're an enthusiast. We have the Craft Cocktail Club, which is amazing space to learn and to share and to kind of go on a cocktail journey. So that's the Craft Cocktail Club. If you're industry, Craft Bartender Community, both on Facebook. Our website is abarabove.com, and you can find all of our bar tools. You can find a link for the mixology certification there as well. And you could go to YouTube and type in A Bar Above, and my, you know, fuzzy face is going to come up there, and you can learn all kinds of fun stuff with us for sure.
And we've been talked, you are co-founder of A Bar Above. I take it your wife is the other co-founder?
She is. She's the brains of the operation. She does, you know, the day-to-day and has a team and really runs the business. And I do a lot of the outreach, tool development, other parts of the business as well. Kind of the creative space of it.
In absentia, what is her name?
Julia Tunstall is her name. And
Julia?
I'm a very lucky man to have her. Yeah.
Well, good. We've talked about you and you being co-founder, but we had to get the other half in there so before we left. So, Mike, any last comments or questions before we say goodnight to – we're goodnight here because we're in Florida. You're in California, so it's not really good night yet for you. But,
it's not 4 over there, is it? 4:10?
No. 5:10. So it's 5, about 10. Time 5. For me to have a glass of wine.
Yeah, there you go. Actually, any time is a good time to have a glass of wine.
Right?
Yeah. So, well, Chris, thank you very much. Fantastic information there. And it just answers a lot of the questions. When I first got contact about you, I'm going, wine and a cocktail? But that really does show the possibilities there. And I've already had people email me after I put up your recipes on our Facebook page here, already email me saying, I can't wait to try some of these. These look great. And so it's
nice. That's great.
Yeah, it's people have already, you know, jumped into it. So, and if they are looking at any other recipes or something, is do you have them on your website or?
We have a lot of recipes on the website, and you can kind of look through there to find some. We don't really specialize in wine cocktails, so you're going to see a lot more traditional style cocktails. But, you know, once you understand the concept, it's pretty easy to you know, have some fun, incorporate some wine here and there, and have a really interesting and amazing cocktail.
Or start adding in your 1932 Petrus or something like that, you know, and
you know, this is a gateway right here.
Yeah, make it a little special. Okay, thank you, Chris, for taking the time out this evening and joining us. And best of luck to you and a wonderful future for what the venture you've already started on. And best of luck to A Bar Above.
Thank you so much for having me, gentlemen, and hopefully we'll get a chance to connect again.
Keep in mind. We'll make a note of it, and in a year or so, we'll see if we can't touch up with you and see where you're at then.
Appreciate it. All right, gentlemen, we'll have a great evening.
You also. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That was... Yeah, that was interesting. It's obviously he has the knowledge in wine, but to apply it to the cocktail aspect of it, that is something unique, and that's really quite unusual. So, great talk with him. I enjoyed that. I had questions before the show, but that explains a lot of it. Today is tannet day, by the way. A tannet is a type of grape and it's made into a wine. So you can always find tannet just about everywhere in the world, because it is available just about everywhere in the world. And I've heard that tannet grape is the most planted grape in the world. So I read that somewhere, and I can't remember what the source is, but it is planted everywhere. Sunday is Easter, as all of you in religious persuasion. Passover starts tomorrow. And so we got Easter and Passover here, both on together with us, as always. And Sunday is also World Malbec Day. So it's something that falls on the same day as Easter this year, World Malbec Day. Good wine, Malbec. If you haven't had it, Argentina puts out some really nice Malbecs. And so... you can go to the Argentinian section of your local wine shop and pick up a Malbec and enjoy it on Sunday, which is Malbec Day. And that's it. I wanted to point out those couple of holidays there and a couple of wine days. And
very cool.
Yeah. So, but
it is protein 8:15 p.m. Eastern Time. Here in Florida, and I guess unless you have any late minute things going on, we'll close the show and see everybody next Thursday, 21st. Yeah, it's very enjoyable, very interesting.
Yeah, I try it myself.
I think I'm gonna see what I can do and get out there and get some of these ingredients together and see what I can come up with. Follow up.
Mike and I were a little apprehensive about what Chris was going to bring to the table here tonight. We weren't sure what his concept was, and we are both pleasantly surprised. It was very interesting, and he was very knowledgeable. So it was a good show.
Join us next week at 7 p.m. Eastern Time if you want to join us live, or any of our streaming services in archives as well. That's always, we thank you for that. We'll be live next Thursday, April 21st at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, and our YouTube channel as well. And thank you. I forgot to save. Oh, sorry. thank you all. And have a great week.
Have a good week. Don't forget to tune in Saturday morning to Mike's radio show. And we'll see you all next week. Thanks for listening. Be safe.
Thanks.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinedcr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
All About Wine.
That's right. And close that out. Go to the green room.